ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So we are reading from Krishna book and discussing about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So today we are going to discuss about Puthana, demon, and how she was killed by Krishna. While Nanda Maharaj was returning home, he considered Vasudev's warning that there might be some disturbance in Gokul. Certainly the advice was friendly and not false. So Nanda thought, there is some truth in it. Therefore, out of fear, he began to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is quite natural for a devotee in danger to think of Krishna because he has no other shelter. When a child is in danger, he takes shelter of his mother or father. Similarly, a devotee is always under the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when he specifically sees some danger, he remembers the Lord very rapidly. After consulting with his demonic ministers, Kamsa instructed a witch named Puthana, who knew the black art of killing small children by ghastly sinful methods, to kill all kinds of children in the cities, villages, and pasturing grounds. Such witches can play their black art only where there is no chanting or hearing of the holy name of Krishna. It is said that wherever the chanting of the holy name of Krishna is done, even negligently, all bad elements, witches, ghosts, and dangerous calamities immediately disappear. And this is certainly true of the place where the chanting of the holy name of Krishna is done seriously, especially in Vrindavan, when the Supreme Lord was personally present. Therefore, the doubts of Nanda Maharaj were certainly based on affection for Krishna. Actually, there was no danger from the activities of Puthana, despite her powers. Such witches are called Khechari, which means they can fly in the sky. The word Khechari is coming from Kha means sky. Kha means sky. And chori means one, a female gender, one who moves around. So one who moves in the sky. So these witches can fly in the sky, which means they can fly in the sky. This black art of witchcraft is still practiced by some women in the remote northwestern side of India. They can transfer themselves from one place to another on the branch of an uprooted tree. I think in the west they fly on a broom. Puthana knew this witchcraft, and therefore she is described in the Bhagavatam as Khechari. Puthana entered the country of Gokul, the residential quarter of Nanda Maharaj, without permission. Dressing herself just like a beautiful woman, she entered the house of Mother Jasoda. She appeared very beautiful, with raised hips, nicely swollen breasts, earrings, and flowers in her hair. She looked specially beautiful on account of her thin waist. She was glancing at everyone with very attractive looks and smiling face, and all the residents of Vrindavan were captivated. The innocent cowherd women thought that she was a goddess of fortune, appearing in Vrindavan with a lotus flower in her hand. It seemed to them that she had personally come to see Krishna, who is her husband. Because of her exquisite beauty, no one checked her movement, and therefore she freely entered the house of Nanda Maharaj. Puthana, the killer of many, many children, found baby Krishna lying on a small bed, and she could at once perceive that the baby was hiding his unparalleled potencies. Puthana thought this child is so powerful that he can destroy the whole universe immediately. So Putana was very expert in killing small children. Putana, it has been described in Padma Puran that, I'm sorry, Vishnu Puran, that Putana, whenever she cast her spell upon a child, that within a few hours' time the child would die. That would, she just had to look at somebody, some child, and the child would be dead. And the body of the child would become yellow, and the child would die. But for Krishna, she took special measure to kill Krishna. She smeared her breath with most deadly poison called Kalkut. The Kalkut is the poison that came out when the milk ocean was churned. The Kalkut is the poison that Lord Shiva drank and held in his neck. And that poison actually was taken also by the snakes, the cobras, especially the king cobras. And they have that poison. So the cobra snake, when it's extracted from the cobra, king cobra, it's called Kalkut. King cobra in Sanskrit is called Shankhuchu. It's not exactly called a cobra. It's called Shankhuchu. Shankhu means conch shell. And chur means head. The king cobra's head is like a conch shell. It's not exactly flat. It's kind of like a conch shell. It's kind of swollen. And king cobras contain 12 ounces of poison.
12 ounces? Like a bottle of Coke.
Okay, yeah, like a bottle of Coke. So, and Putana actually smeared her breast, or one sometimes is said that she carried that poison in her breast. Instead of milk, there was this poison in her breast. And another description of Putana has been given by Srila Rupa Goswami in Lalita Madhav. There, in Lalita Madhav, Rupa Goswami is describing about Radharani appearing. He is describing that actually Radharani is the daughter of Vinda Mountain. Radha and Chandra, Radharani and Chandravali, are the daughters of Vinda Mountain. The Himalayan mountain has a daughter called Parvati. And Parvati's husband is Lord Shiva. So Vinda, due to that, became envious that Himalaya has a daughter who is married to Lord Shiva. And so he wanted to have a daughter who would be married to a personality even greater than Lord Shiva. So, and as a result of that austerity, I mean, he performed great austerities, and as a result of that austerity, he got this daughter. And two daughters actually, Radha and Chandra. And soon after their birth, Putana actually stole the children, stole those two baby daughters. And she was flying through the sky. And at that time, the priests of Vinda, Vinda is actually a personality and he's a king. So his priests started to chant the Rakshash Vinashak mantra, the mantra that would kill the demon. So they started to chant the mantra, and as a result of the mantra, Putana's life was in danger. So out of fear, she dropped the children. And rather, King Vrishabhanu got Radhika, who was found in a river, floating in the river, and his brother Chandrabhanu got Chandravali, the other daughter. So there also Putana was creating trouble. creating problems. So here Putana came to kill Krishna, and Putana's understanding is very significant. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is situated in everyone's heart. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that he gives one necessary intelligence, and he also causes one to forget. Putana was immediately aware that the child whom she was observing in the house of Nanda Maharaj was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. He was lying there as a small baby, but that does not mean that he was less powerful. The materialistic theory that God worship is anthropomorphic is not correct. No living being can become God by undergoing meditation or austerities. God is always God. Krishna, as the child baby, is as complete as he is as a full-fledged youth. The Mayavadi theory holds that the living entity was formerly God, but has now become overwhelmed by the influence of Maya. Therefore they say that presently he is not God, but when the influence of Maya is taken away, then he again becomes God. This theory cannot be applied to the minute living entities. The living entities are minute parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are minute particles or sparks of the Supreme Fire, but are not the original fire or Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even from the beginning of his appearance in the house of Vasudeva and Devaki. Krishna showed the nature of a small baby and closed his eyes, as if to avoid the face of Putana. This closing of the eyes is interpreted and studied in different ways by the devotees. Some say that Krishna closed his eyes because he did not like to see the face of Putana, who had killed so many children and who had now come to kill him. Others say that something extraordinary was being dictated to her, and in order to give her assurance, Krishna closed his eyes so that she would not be frightened. And yet others interpret in this way: Krishna appeared to kill the demons and give protection to the devotees, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Cha Dushkritam. The first demon to be killed was a woman. According to Vedic rules, the killing of a woman, a brahmana, cows, or of a child is forbidden. Krishna was obliged to kill the demon Putana, and because the killing of a woman is forbidden according to Vedic Shastra, he could not help but close his eyes. Another interpretation is that Krishna closed his eyes because he simply took Putana to be his nurse. Putana came to Krishna just to offer her breast for the Lord to suck. Krishna is so merciful that even though he knew Putana was there to kill him, he took her as his nurse or mother. So we find there are two different interpretations of closing of Krishna's eyes. So this is how Bhagavatam has been interpreted, and different shlokas of Bhagavatam has been interpreted by different acharyas. Now, does it mean that one is correct and others are wrong? No. This is the understanding that the way it is revealed in the heart of the devotees, that is how the devotees interpret that. Like some acharyas felt that Krishna closed his eyes because he didn't want to see this sinful Putana who killed so many children. But in some other's heart it dawned as if that Krishna closed his eyes because he was going to do something very wonderful. He was going to kill this Putana demon. But he didn't want Putana to be afraid of him. Because if Putana became afraid, then Putana may drop Krishna and run away. So Krishna didn't want to take a chance. In some other's heart, it was revealed that Krishna closed his eyes like that because Krishna considered that Putana that Putana was the first demon to be killed by him, and she was a woman. And according to the Vedic injunction, a woman should not be killed. A woman, a cow, a brahmana, and a child should not be killed. And some other acharyas realized that Krishna closed his eyes because he considered Putana to be his nurse. He just accepted Putana, and in complete surrender, in complete, being completely confident about her, Krishna just closed his eyes. So in this way, different acharyas in Srimad Bhagavatam gave different interpretations of Srimad Bhagavatam. There are seven kinds of mothers according to Vedic injunction. The real mother, the wife of a teacher or spiritual master, the wife of a king, the wife of a brahmana, the cow, the nurse, and the mother earth. The seven mothers. Because Putana came to take Krishna on her lap and offer her breast milk to be sucked by him, she was accepted by Krishna as one of his mothers. That is considered to be another person, another reason he closed his eyes. He had to kill a nurse or mother, but his killing of his mother or nurse was not different from his love for his real mother or foster mother, Jasoda. We further understand from Vedic information that Putana was also treated as a mother and given the same facility as Jasoda. As Jasoda was given liberation from the material world, so Putana was also given liberation. When the baby Krishna closed his eyes, Putana took him on her lap. She did not know that she was holding death personified. If a person mistakes a snake for a rope, he dies. Similarly, Putana killed so many babies before meeting Krishna, but now she was accepting the snake that would kill her immediately. When Putana was taking baby Krishna on her lap, both Jashoda and Rahini were present, but they did not forbid her because she was so beautifully dressed and because she showed motherly affection towards Krishna. Like, here is also another point, like in Padma Puran, where also Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes have been described. In Padma Puran it has been described that Putana actually came at night to kill Krishna. And at that time everyone was asleep. Now here we can see that even there are two contradictory statements. So these contradictions in the scriptures has been harmonized with the understanding that these are different kalpas. In some kalpa Krishna came at night, but in some other kalpa Putana came as a beautiful woman during the daytime, when everybody was around. So the basic understanding is that we must accept the scriptures as the truth and nothing but the truth, even if there is contradiction in the scriptures. So that is called Shraddha, that is called faith. Whatever has been mentioned is the truth and nothing but the truth, and we should not depend so much upon our ability to judge. Our reason, our logic, our perception, our intellect is only relative and can perceive only a fraction of the reality. But the sages could see the three aspects of time, past, present and future, and they can see everything as it is. Therefore, their words, the scriptures, are never wrong. When Putana was taking baby Krishna on her lap, both Jashoda and Rohini were present, but they did not forbid her because she was so beautifully dressed and because she showed motherly affection towards Krishna. They could not understand that she was a sword within a decorated case. Putana had smeared a very powerful poison on her breast. And immediately after taking the baby on her lap, she pushed her breastly nipples within his mouth. She was hoping that as soon as he would suck her breast, he would die. But baby Krishna very quickly took the nipple in anger. He sucked the milk poison along with the life air of the demon. In other words, Krishna simultaneously sucked the milk from her breast and killed her by sucking out her life. Krishna is so merciful that because the demon Putana came to offer her breast milk to him, he fulfilled her desire and accepted her activity as motherly. But to stop her from further nefarious activities, he immediately killed her. And because the demon was killed by Krishna, she got liberation. So this is the advantage of even being killed by Krishna. When one is killed by Krishna, he attains liberation. When one is killed by Krishna, he attains liberation, but generally they attain the liberation of sajujya mukti, liberation of merging into Brahma Jyoti. But when at the time of death they have some favorable exchange with Krishna, then they actually attain the higher forms of liberation, namely Sharupya, Samipya, Shalakya and Shashti. And here we can see that Putana, because he treated Krishna like a child and she took the role of a mother, therefore she actually got her eternal position in the spiritual sky as Krishna's mother or Krishna's nurse. When Krishna sucked out her very breath, Putana fell down on the ground, spread his arms and legs and began to cry, "Oh child, leave me, leave me." She was crying loudly and perspiring, and her whole body became wet. As she died screaming, there was a tremendous vibration both on the earth and in the sky, in all directions, and people thought the thunderbolts were falling. Thus the nightmare of the Putana witch was over, and she assumed her real feature as a great demon. She opened her fierce mouth and spread her arms and legs all over. She fell exactly as Vritrasura when struck by the thunderbolt of Indra. The long hair on her head was scattered all over her body. Her fallen body extended up to 12 miles and smashed all the trees to pieces. And everyone was struck with wonder upon seeing this gigantic body. Her teeth appeared just like plowed roads, and her nostrils appeared just like mountain caves. Her breasts appeared like small hills, and her hair was a vast reddish bush. So these demons actually have mystic powers. They perform Ashtanga Yoga, and by mastering Ashtanga Yoga, they attain some kind of siddhi or power. So, actually, in Ashtanga Yoga, the siddhis are obstacles. The purpose of Ashtanga Yoga is to cross the hurdles of these siddhis. The siddhis are offered as a test. If one accepts the siddhi, then he fails. But when one rejects the siddhis, then he is promoted to the next stage. So in this way, when one completes all the siddhis, 8 siddhis, then he attains the state of samadhi. And in samadhi one can see, a yogi can see the super soul in the heart. But the demons, what they do, they practice this Ashtanga Yoga process to get the power. And with the power, what they do? They simply want to enjoy themselves. They want to enjoy this material nature. And as a result of that, they simply create disturbance to others. If we have the power and if we don't use the power in Krishna's service, rather instead of using it for Krishna's service, if we use it for ourselves, then we simply create disturbance. Whereas when one uses these powers for Krishna's service, then he benefits others with the siddhi. So, so Putana had the power, yoga siddhi. She could fly through the sky, she could change herself into a beautiful woman, and she could just cast a spell over somebody and kill him. So this is how the witches and the demons act. But no matter how much she covered her original form of a witch, a demoness, with this power and appeared to be a very beautiful woman, but that was only a mystic spell. And as soon as the spell was over, when she died, she didn't have any power left to cast the spell. So she appeared in her original form. And here it says that, her body is 12 miles long. Now one may question, that how is it possible? How can one have a 12 mile long body? So now, here is a test of your faith. Now consider an ant. An ant, if an ant tries to measure the body of a human being, how big the body will be? To an ant, according to ant's measurement, a man's body will be 12 miles long, right? Or even bigger. Similarly, according to our calculation, the bodies of these witches and demons are very large. They're very powerful. And also another thing is that in the scriptures it is often mentioned that these demons are very, their bodies are very vast, very big. But although they are very big, but when one takes shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, no matter how powerful they are, they cannot do anything to the devotee. Her eye sockets appeared like blind wells, and her two thighs appeared like two banks of a river. Her two hands appeared like two strongly constructed bridges, and her abdomen seemed like a dried up lake. All the cowherd men and women became struck with awe and wonder upon seeing this, and the tumultuous sound of her falling shocked their brains and ears and made their hearts beat strongly. When the gopis saw little Krishna fearlessly playing on Putana's lap, they very quickly came and picked him up. Mother Jashoda, Rohini and other elderly gopis immediately performed the auspicious rituals by taking the tail of a cow and circumambulating his body. The child was completely washed with the urine of a cow, and the dust created by the hooves of the cows was thrown all over his body. This was all just to save little Krishna from future inauspicious accidents. This incident gives us a clear indication of how important the cow is to the family, society, and to living beings in general. The transcendental body of Krishna did not require any protection. But to instruct us on the importance of the cow, the Lord was smeared over with the cow dung, washed with urine of a cow, and sprinkled with the dust upraised by the walking of the cows. Yes, so this is how Krishna killed Putana. And where did it happen? It happened here. If we were here 5,000 years ago, we could see that Putana's body was lying here. Not exactly this spot. That spot is Gokul. Nanda Maharaj actually came to Vrindavan afterward. All this happened in Gokul. But when these demons started to create disturbances there, Then Nanda Maharaj shifted their residence from Gokul to Vrindavan because they felt that Vrindavan was more secure. And actually in this land of Vrindavan, Kamsa cannot enter. Someday I'll tell you the story why Kamsa cannot enter into Vrindavan. But the other demons came, but when they came, they got killed and they got liberated. And it is important that we remember these pastimes of Krishna because often one wonders, why, what is the use of killing so many demons? Why Krishna plays a pastime like this? There are of course various reasons, but two important reasons is that one is when Krishna comes, the devotees become attracted to him and the demons become envious of him. That's the natural tendency. Who is a demon? A demon is a person who is envious of Krishna. Right? Now, when a person sees Krishna, and if he is envious of Krishna, then his envy increases. His envy becomes more intense. Because the object of his envy is right there. And then, if that person is very powerful, then he gives vent to his envy by trying to kill Krishna. Therefore the demon try to kill Krishna as soon as he comes. That's always the case, excepting the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, he killed the demons by love. He killed the demoniac propensities. He didn't kill the demons. He killed the demoniac propensities in the individual. Why? Because if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took up a weapon to kill the demons, then no one would be left alive in this world. Everybody had to be killed because everyone is a demon. But fortunately, everybody in this age is a miniature demon. Very small demon. He can't really do very big, can't cause big harm to Krishna. But those days, these demons were actually very powerful. Like we can see, like Kamsa and his associates, Shishupal, Jarasandha, Dantavakra, they were very, very powerful demons. And they tried to oppose it, they opposed Krishna. So naturally, the demons became negative about Krishna, envious of Krishna, and Krishna had to finally kill them. That's one reason why Krishna in his pastimes kills the demons. Another reason is, just as white stands out of black, you know the theory, know the expression, that white stands out in order to make a white more visible. You paint the background with black, right? So in order to increase the love of his devotees, Krishna creates a contrast. And that's why the demons are there. And when the demons come and when the demons act in a certain way, the devotees' love for Krishna increases. First they become full of anxiety, like when they saw, after Krishna killed Putana, they became very afraid. They thought that Putana probably killed Krishna. What happened to their Krishna? And then they saw that gigantic figure of a witch. And their first concern was, what happened to Krishna? Where is Krishna? Did anything happen to Krishna? And then they saw, first they thought that probably Krishna is dead. So when they felt like that, their heart really broke in pain. When we love somebody very intensely, and when something inauspicious happens to him or her, then we feel very, very bad. We feel great anxiety and great pain. But then they saw Krishna was playing on the body of Putana. In between her breasts, Krishna was crawling. So then they were relieved. Then they immediately got Krishna out, immediately picked Krishna up, and what they did, they immediately did all auspicious, performed all the auspicious rituals to protect Krishna from any future danger, future accident. And it was happening time and time again. We'll discuss Trinavarta Sura, Aghasura, Vakasura. So in this way, the contrast between demons and devotees actually makes the devotee shine forth more brilliantly. Does anybody have any question? Yes, Baba. Yeah, because you know one may start to speculate. So to protect from the speculation. If it is explained properly, actually, it was explained by Jiva Goswami. And following the explanation of Jiva Goswami, Bhakti Vinod Thakur wrote a book called Krishna Sandarbha. In that book, these explanations, the so-called esoteric meanings, have been given. Yeah, I'll see if I can get the book and I'll try to
translate it.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
You know, some demons, they take up a different, or Ashtanga yoga. Get from city, do mischief. Is it also just like we have our bhakti yoga? So do some demons purposely take it up to get some advantage?
That's why the Vedic scriptures, especially devotional service, was kept as a secret. That's why. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that Raja Vidya Raja Gunsha. So that some unqualified person does not have access to it, do not get access to it. Yeah, that's why it's kept as a secret.
But of course, it's an open thing.
Yeah, now it's open. It's open because we are hopeless in this age.
Desperate.
It's a crisis, you know, it's an emergency.
Last chance.
Like, you know, if this doesn't work, then we are doomed. Because no other process will work in this age. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought devotional service.
Does Krishna also give them siddhis, and is it also a test to advance the devotees to actually follow the conclusions? Do they get that from that?
The understanding is that a devotee already has the siddhis, right? But he doesn't use it himself. But whenever necessary, Krishna will make him use it. It's better that the devotees don't become aware. Because if he becomes aware of his power at an immature stage, he may turn into a demon. It's like, you know, a rich man's son. Like, he is just by birth, you know, like he inherited his father's millions. But the father doesn't give him the money. Right? Although, theoretically, he actually owns it. But the father doesn't give him until the time he becomes mature. right? And learns how to utilize the money. Because otherwise he'll waste it, otherwise he'll squander it. Right? Others will come and cheat him. So many dangers are there. Therefore the father actually protects him by not allowing him that.
Krishna lets him use it when he wants him to use it.
Huh?
Krishna lets him use it when Krishna wants
him to use it. When it's necessary, Krishna will. Like for example, you know, each friend, each cowherd boy is a Vishnu Tattva. They're even more powerful than Vishnu. Right? Each cowherd boy is more powerful than Vishnu. But when a demon comes, then these cowherd boys become afraid, right? And then they seek shelter of Krishna. And they call out to Krishna for help. Krishna, please come and help us, save us. But actually for them, for each cowherd boy, you know, to kill a demon is just, you know, is a child's play. What to speak of these cowherd boys? Or Vishnu, or even Lord Shiva. Even Maya can kill these demons in no time. Actually, she has to just, you know, stop the supply of oxygen, right? And they'll be finished in no time. Yeah, the best application for logic in spiritual understanding or in acquiring spiritual knowledge is to understand that with logic we cannot understand spiritual nature. You understand? Because the logic fails there. Because the spiritual nature is, you know, completely dominated by Krishna's will. There you can't question, it's 6 o'clock now, in the evening, but why the sun is in the middle of the sky? Right? There your watch may say 6 o'clock in the evening, but you know, if Krishna desires, the sun can be up in the middle of the sky.
So
you use your logic to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His will is the Absolute. And we don't have any other way but to surrender unto Him. Does it sound logical? Since He is the Supreme, powerful, and since we are insignificant living entities, why shouldn't we surrender ourselves to Him? Isn't it logical? Okay, Hare Krishna. So, last 2 days we did kirtan in the temple. But today I was actually told that they have this 24-hour kirtan of Hare Krishna Mahamantra in the temple. Krishna delivered Trinavartasura. Salvation of Trinavarta. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is always full of 6 opulences, namely complete wealth, complete strength, complete fame, complete knowledge, complete beauty, and complete renunciation. The Lord appears in different complete eternal forms of incarnation. The conditioned soul has immense opportunity to hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord in these different incarnations. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said, Janma Karma Chame Divvam. The pastimes and activities of the Lord are not material. They are beyond the material conception. But the conditioned soul can benefit by hearing such uncommon activities. Hearing is an opportunity to associate with the Lord. To hear His activities is to evolve to the transcendental nature simply by hearing. The conditioned soul has a natural aptitude to hear something about other conditioned souls in the form of fiction, drama, and novel. That inclination to hear something about others may be utilized in hearing the pastimes of the Lord. Then one can immediately evolve to His transcendental nature. Krishna's pastimes are not only beautiful, they are also very pleasing to the mind. So the hearing is the sound representation of an object. Actually, everything, every object has a name. And when we hear that name, then that object actually appears in our mind. Doesn't it happen? Like when we think, we hear and then we think. But that thinking or the transmission of the objects through the sound carries the impression of the objects in our mind. Like for example, if we think of, if somebody comes and tells, Akinchana is here, then what actually happens to our mind when someone tells that Akinchana is here? If you know Akinchana, then immediately you get the picture of Akinchana. So in this way, the sound actually carries the images. Now, in the material platform, these material sounds actually carry the images of material objects. But the transcendental sounds carry the impression of transcendental objects. Therefore, it is very important that we hear about the transcendental subject matters. Because the transcendental subjects will carry the transcendental objects into your mind. Therefore, it is through hearing Krishna actually becomes manifest in our mind. Although we say it's mind, but actually on a spiritual plane it's not the mind, it's the heart. Krishna and His pastimes and His abode becomes manifest in our heart. Therefore, Prabhupada is saying that it's very important that we hear the beautiful pastimes of Krishna, and they are very pleasing to the mind. These pastimes of Krishna are very pleasing to our mind. If someone takes advantage of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, the material contamination of dust accumulated in the heart due to long association with material nature can be immediately cleansed. Lord Chaitanya also instructed that simply by hearing the transcendental name of Lord Krishna, one can cleanse the heart of all material contamination. There are different processes for self-realization, but this process of devotional service, of which hearing is the most important function, when adapted by any conditioned soul, will automatically cleanse him of the material contamination and enable him to realize his real constitutional position. It's a very important instruction. Did everybody understand? Okay, I'll repeat. Lord Chaitanya also instructed that simply by hearing the transcendental name of Lord Krishna, one can cleanse the heart of all material contamination. Simply by hearing the transcendental name of Lord Krishna, our hearts will become purified of all material contamination. There are different processes of self-realization, but this process of devotional service, of which hearing is the most important function, when adopted by any conditioned soul, will automatically cleanse him of the material contamination and enable him to realize his real constitutional position. Is it clear now? Or should I read once again? And just hammer this instruction in the mind. Because if you understand this, then you're fixed up in spiritual life. Of all spiritual activities, of all the processes for spiritual elevation, elevation to the spiritual platform, devotional service is the most important. Right? And of devotional service, in the process of devotional service, hearing is the most important. And anybody who has accepted the process of hearing, the transcendental name and pastimes of the Lord, he will become free from material contamination without any doubt. If anybody accepts this process, then his heart is bound to become cleansed. Now the question may arise, but still we see that some people are not really making advancement. And so many people fell down. Why is that? What's the answer? Ramananda? Why? Yeah, they did not follow the process properly. Devotional service is all purifying. As I was explaining the other day, that devotional service is Kleshagni and Shubhada. The first two effects, the initial effects of devotional service, practicing devotional service, is that one immediately becomes free from all misery, all sufferings. And it brings him all auspiciousness. Now if someone feels that it is not really benefiting him, or if someone feels that it didn't really free him or her from material miseries, then you have to understand that one is not following the process properly. And a pure devotee is full of all spiritual qualities. When one practices spiritual process properly, then he is bound to get the result. That means in due course of time, he is going to become a pure devotee. What's the meaning of a pure devotee? A pure devotee is a person whose heart is completely free from all material contamination. And the heart automatically becomes purified, cleansed, when we chant the holy name. Is it clear? Everyone is convinced? Sure? 100%? Does anybody have any doubt? Yes, Manjari, you have some doubts? Yeah, go ahead. What's your doubt?
I don't always, it's not inculcated into my heart.
That means you don't have the doubt about the process, but you have doubts about your ability to perform to practice the process. Yeah, therefore you have to always remain in good association. Therefore association is very important. Although mentally we have been convinced, actually this has been explained by Rupa Goswami in his Ujjala Nilmani. There's a book called Ujjala Nilmani by Rupa Goswami. He's saying that devotional service, acceptance of devotional service, is not like pouring water in a cup. Like the water contains the cup. The cup contains the water. But the cup and water doesn't become one. You understand? But devotional service, acceptance of devotional service in the mind
it actually the self and devotion service becomes one. And there, and he gives the example, it's like putting an iron rod in a fire. When you put iron rod in fire, then the iron rod becomes fire. Right? Similarly, when we place ourselves in devotional service, when we place ourselves in this pure spiritual activity, then we also become spiritualized. But we, as you said, like assimilation hasn't taken place. Now, as you said, like, you see, in your intellect, in your mind, you have conceived the idea, right, of devotional service. But you haven't become fully involved in devotional service, right? There is, you haven't become one with devotional service. And that is the that is our problem, that we have to become completely absorbed in devotional service. Until that time, we must remain in the association of devotees so that we can practice the process properly. And Prabhupada has given us, actually Prabhupada has given us ISKCON to practice the process properly. I mean, ISKCON has certain rules and regulations that everybody has to follow. And when one follows that, he makes, you know, he derives the result. He derives the benefit. What is the instruction, what are the rules and regulations in ISKCON? Follow the four regulative principles. That's the first thing. Chant 16 rounds every day, or chant 16 rounds every day. First thing. Follow the regulative principles. Attend the morning programs. And be engaged in the service through ISKCON. So if we do that, we may feel that we are not making advancement, but we are making advancement. It's something like when you set off in a ship, when you sail in a ship. I mean, as soon as you get into the boat and the boat starts moving, then you realize how fast you're moving, right? The land gradually disappears, right? Very soon, the land goes out of your sight, and you see that, oh, so fast you're moving. But then when you're in the middle of the ocean, then you feel that it's not moving at all. It's water, water everywhere, right? And you're not making any progress. But you are making progress. Although to you it seems that you are not making progress. But because you are on the boat, and because that boat is moving towards the spiritual destination, you are also moving. So we have to just remain in ISKCON and carry on rendering service, following the prescriptions that Srila Prabhupada has given. And we are bound to reach our ultimate destination. Even though sometimes you may get bored. Actually, did you ever take a boat ride? A long boat ride, 10 days, 12 days? I mean, it gets really boring. And you feel, oh, when shall I? So similarly, in Sadhan Bhakti platform also, we get bored. Because, you know, we are not actually getting the material enjoyment. We are following the four regulative principles. So we are, you know, sealed off, you know, the so-called mundane enjoyments. And at the same time, till the time we reach the spiritual platform, we are not tasting the spiritual mellows also. So we are in a sort of a limbo. We are neither here nor there. We are neither in the, we are neither enjoying the material nature nor we are relishing the spiritual nature. Of course, there is only one enjoyment we have of the spiritual nature, and that is prasadam. Therefore, Prabhupada said devotee should get nice prasadam. And of course, then, and when we become situated on the spiritual platform, then everything becomes joyful. Whatever we do becomes full of joy. Singing is joyful, dancing is joyful, worshipping the deity is joyful, hearing Krishna katha is joyful, doing things for Krishna is joyful. But until the time we have developed a relationship with Krishna, we may feel a little bored. But don't worry. In due course of time, it'll happen. You understand, Manjari? Do you remember the different stages of spiritual progress? From Shraddha to Prema? Adau Shraddha, Tato Sadhu Sangha. Faith, then association of devotees, then initiation and rendering service under the direction of the spiritual master, then anartha nibritti, becoming free from material contaminations. Then, what's after that? Steadiness, nishtha. Then after nishtha, taste. Hari Bol, Hansudha Prabhu. Please come in.
Nice.
So taste. So you can see this taste is a long way. And therefore Rupa Goswami instructed that utsahat nishchayat dhairyat. We should be enthusiastic, we should be confident, and we should be patient. But that doesn't mean we should become lethargic. No. We shouldn't become lazy. Therefore, utsahat, always we should be enthusiastic. Yeah, Priya Manjari, what's your question? Yeah. There are two types of associations, Vopu and Vani. The personal association and spiritual instructions. At a neophyte stage, at an initial stage, Vopu is more important than Vani. Therefore, we need the personal association of senior devotees. Like if Vani was everything, if everybody was so advanced to associate through Vani, then everybody can get the association of Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, right? But the problem is when you read them, we don't really understand. We need somebody who is practicing. So therefore, we, along with the Grantha Bhagavat, we need a person Bhagavat. But of course, at an advanced stage, a devotee through the scriptures will associate with the previous acharyas. But that takes time.
How long does it take to get to the pure chanting?
Not long.
You answered the same question yesterday and you got the answer. You asked the question yesterday and I answered you. So why don't you try to understand that? Do you remember what my answer was?
Yes.
Okay, let me remind you. When you're walking, you ask me the same question. How long does it take to become a pure devotee? So I asked you, for how long you've been in the movement? So you said 5 years. And I said, still you're asking such a silly question. Do you think spiritual advancement is relative to time? Is it relative to time? Is it? Can you say that if somebody stays in the movement for 12 years, he's going to become a pure devotee? No, it's not a matter of time. It's a matter of sincerity. It's a matter of earnestness in rendering service. How sincerely you accept the process, accordingly, you'll get purified. So don't ever ask such silly questions. Try to understand. And, accept the process case seriously. And there are books, every day there are Bhagavatam classes. And in Bhagavatam classes, these points are clearly explained every day. Now, what does it take for one to become a pure devotee? What is the criterion? Tell me. What is the requirement for becoming a pure devotee?
Sincerity.
Sincerity in what? Sincerity in?
Following the
order of spiritual master. Sincerity in following the process of Krishna consciousness. So as you sincerely render service, then to that extent you will get the taste of spiritual life. And ultimately it doesn't depend also in our endeavor. Ultimate consideration is Krishna's mercy. One receives devotional service, pure devotional service, simply by Krishna's mercy, not by anything else. We cannot gate crash into spiritual sky. The gate has to open for us. Krishna, when we become qualified, Krishna will take us back. Therefore, this kind of questions are completely irrelevant. How long does it take one to chant the pure name of Krishna? How long does it take? You answer me. How long? For somebody it may be 1 second. And for somebody else it may be millions of lifetimes. Right? So take the process seriously. Jyotirmay?
I understand the whole process that one follows in different stages of devotion like that. But there was one devotee that he was describing how when Krishna, he always fulfills the promise of his devotee, and like sometimes he even breaks his own promise. Just like in the case of Bhishma Dev, he actually fulfilled the desire and the promise of his devotee and he broke his own promise. So likewise, Prabhupada has made a promise to us that if we follow the state ISKCON, that we will go back to Godhead if we chant 16 hours. So is this like some special mercy that could jump over the whole process?
Not just chant 16 rounds, but you see, as you chant 16 rounds, you'll automatically develop faith in Prabhupada's instructions, right? And then, you'll start to follow his instructions. And so in the beginning you may say, well, if we just chant 16 rounds, but say if somebody chants 16 rounds but doesn't follow Prabhupada's other instructions, then Prabhupada will not bestow his mercy upon him. Say for example, if somebody chants 16 rounds but breaks the four regulative principles, then do you think he'll be able to go back to Godhead? Do you think Prabhupada will be responsible for him? No. Because Prabhupada's instruction is to follow the four regulative principles. Right? Then Prabhupada said, you cooperate, right, with your devotees, with my followers. Your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate with each other. So if somebody chants 16 rounds but doesn't cooperate with other devotees of ISKCON, then Prabhupada won't shower his mercy upon him. Ramprasad, can you switch on this fan? to give you an example, there are some devotees who formed some kind of other groups leaving ISKCON, and they are chanting 16 rounds. And I have my doubts whether, Prabhupada will be responsible for that. They are not cooperating with ISKCON, but they are creating disturbance to ISKCON. Of course, another thing is that if somebody deviates, but then he comes back and becomes steady, then he'll receive Prabhupada's mercy. You see, the main understanding is that ISKCON is the boat, right? And we have to remain in this boat.
It seems like Prabhupada is
Yeah. If you just stay in ISKCON, follow the process, everything will be fine. Okay, so let me continue to read. The Lord, out of His causeless mercy, by developing His eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, one becomes eligible to create friendship with the devotees. Maharaj Parikshit recommended, from practical experience, that everyone try to hear about the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. This Krishna treatise, that's how it, the pronunciation is, T-R-E-T-I-S-E, treatise, or treatise. This Krishna treatise is meant for that purpose, and the reader may take advantage in order to attain the ultimate goal of human life. The Lord, out of His causeless mercy, descends on this material world and displays His activities just like an ordinary man. Unfortunately, the impious entities or the atheistic class of men consider Krishna to be an ordinary man like themselves, and so they deride Him. This is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord Himself when He says, Avajananti mam mudha. The mudhas or the rascals take Krishna to be an ordinary man or a slightly more powerful man. Out of their great misfortune, they cannot accept Him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes such unfortunate persons misrepresent themselves as incarnations of Krishna without referring to the authorized scriptures. When Krishna grew up a little more, He began to turn Himself backside up. Just He rolls over, chest down, back up. He did not merely lie down on His back. And another function was observed by Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's first birthday. They arranged for Krishna's birthday ceremony, which is still observed in all by all followers of the Vedic principles. Krishna's birthday ceremony is observed in India by Hindus, irrespective of different sectarian views. All the cowherd men and women were invited to participate, and they arrived in jubilation. A nice band played, and the people assembled enjoyed it. All the learned brahmanas were invited, and they chanted Vedic hymns for the good fortune of Krishna. During the chanting of the Vedic hymns and playing of the bands, Krishna was bathed by Mother Yashoda. This bathing ceremony is technically called Abhishek, and even today this is observed in all the temples of Vrindavan as Janmashtami day, or the birthday anniversary of Lord Sri Krishna. On this occasion, Mother Yashoda arranged to distribute a large quantity of grains, and first-class cows decorated with golden ornaments were made ready to be given in charity to the learned, respectable brahmanas. Yashoda took her bath and dressed herself nicely, and taking child Krishna, duly dressed and bathed on her lap, she sat down to hear the Vedic hymns chanted by the brahmanas. While listening to the chanting of the Vedic hymns, the child appeared to be falling asleep, and therefore Mother Yashoda very silently laid him down on the bed. Being engaged in receiving all the friends, relatives and residents of Vrindavan on the holy occasion, she forgot to feed the child milk. He was crying, being hungry, but Mother Yashoda could not hear him cry because of the various noises. The child, however, became angry because he was hungry and his mother was not paying attention to him. So he lifted his legs and began to kick his lotus feet just like an ordinary child. Baby Krishna had been placed underneath a hand-driven cart. And while he was kicking his legs, he accidentally touched the wheel of the cart and it collapsed. Various kinds of utensils and brass and metal dishes had been piled up on the handcart, and they all fell down with a great noise. The wheel of the cart separated from the axle, and the spokes of the wheel were all broken and scattered hither and thither. Mother Yashoda and all the gopis, as well as Maharaj Nanda and the cowherd men, were astonished as to how the cart could have collapsed by itself. all the men and women who were assembled for the holy function crowded around and began to suggest how the cart might have collapsed. No one could ascertain the cause that some small children who are entrusted to play with the baby Krishna, informed the crowd that it was due to Krishna striking his feet against the wheel. They assured the crowd that they had seen how it happened with their own eyes, and they strongly asserted the point. Some were listening to that statement of the small children, but others said, "How can you believe the statement of these children?" The cowherd men and women could not understand that the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead was lying there as a baby, and he could do anything. Both the possible and impossible were in his power. While the discussion was going on, baby Krishna cried. Without remonstration, Mother Jasoda picked up the child on her lap and called the learned brahmanas to chant holy Vedic hymns to counteract the evil spirits. At the same time, she allowed the baby to suck her breast. If a child sucks the mother's breast nicely, it is to be understood that he is out of all danger. After this, all the stronger cowherd men put the broken cart in order, and all the scattered things were set up nicely as before. The brahmanas therefore began to offer oblation to the sacrificial fire with yogurt, butter, kusha grass and water. They worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the good fortune of the child. The brahmanas who were present at that time were all qualified because they were not envious. They never indulged in untruthfulness. They were never proud. They were non-violent. And they never claimed any false prestige. They were all bona fide brahmanas, and there was no reason to think that their blessings would be useless. With firm faith in the qualified brahmanas, Nanda Maharaj took his child on his lap and bathed him with water mixed with various herbs while the brahmanas chanted hymns from the Rig, Yajur and Samaveda. It is said that without being a qualified brahmana, one should not read the mantras of the Vedas. Here is the proof that the brahmanas were qualified with all the brahminical symptoms. Maharaj Nanda also had full faith in them. Therefore, they were allowed to perform the ritualistic ceremonies by chanting the Vedic mantras. There are many different varieties of sacrifices recommended for different purposes, but the mantras are all to be chanted by qualified brahmanas. And because in this age of Kali, such qualified brahmanas are not available, all Vedic ritualistic sacrifices are forbidden. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had therefore recommended only one kind of sacrifice in this age, namely Sankirtan Yajna, or simply chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. As the brahmanas chanted the Vedic hymns and performed the ritualistic ceremonies for the second time, Nanda Maharaj again gave huge quantities of grains and many cows to them. All the cows which were given in charity were covered with nice gold embroidered garments, and their horns were bedecked with golden rings. The hooves were covered with silver plate, and they were garlanded, and they wore garlands of flowers. He gave so many cows just for the welfare of his wonderful child, and the brahmanas in return bestowed their heartfelt blessing. And the blessings offered by the able brahmanas were never to be baffled. One day, shortly after the ceremony, when Mother Jashoda was patting her baby on her lap, the baby felt too heavy, and being unable to carry him, she unwillingly placed him on the ground. After a while, she became engaged in household affairs. At the time, one of the servants of Kamsa, known as Trinavarta, as instructed by Kamsa, appeared there in the shape of a whirlwind. He picked up the child on his shoulders and raised a great dust storm all over Vrindavan. Because of this, everyone's eyes became covered within a few moments, and the whole area of Vrindavan became densely dark, so that no one could see himself or anyone else. During this great catastrophe, Mother Jasoda could not see her baby. He was taken away by the whirlwind, and she began to cry very piteously. She fell down on the ground exactly like a cow who has just lost her calf.
When Mother Jasoda was so piteously crying, all the cowherd women immediately came and began to look for the baby. But they were disappointed and could not find him. The Trinavarta demon, who took baby Krishna on his shoulder, went high in the sky. But the baby assumed such a weight that suddenly he could not go any further, and he had to stop his whirlwind activities. Baby Krishna made himself heavy and began to weigh down the demon. The Lord caught hold of his neck. Trinavarta felt the baby to be as heavy as a big mountain, and he tried to get out of his clutches, but he was unable to do so, and his eyes popped out from their sockets. Crying very fiercely, he fell down on the ground of Vrindavan and died. The demon fell exactly like Tripurasura, who was pierced by the arrow of Lord Shiva. He hit the stone ground and his limbs were smashed. His body became visible to all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. When the gopis saw the demon killed and child Krishna very happily playing on his body, they immediately picked Krishna up with great affection. The cowherd men and women became very happy to get back their beloved child Krishna. At the time they began to talk about how wonderful it was that the demon took away the child to devour him, but could not do so. Instead he fell down dead. Some of them supported the situation. This is proper because those who are too sinful die from their sinful reactions. And the child Krishna is pious. Therefore he is saved from all kinds of fearful situations. And we too must have performed great sacrifices in our previous lives, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, giving great wealth in charity and acting philanthropically for the general welfare of men. Because of such pious activities, the child is saved from all danger. The gopis assembled there spoke amongst themselves, "What sort of austerities and penances we must have undergone in our previous lives. We must have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, offered different kinds of sacrifices, made charities and performed many welfare activities for the public, such as growing banyan trees and excavating wells. As a result of these pious activities, we have brought back our child, even though he was supposed to be dead. Now he has come back to enliven his relatives." After observing such wonderful happenings, Nanda Maharaj began to think of the words of Vasudev again and again. After this incident, when Jasoda once was nursing her child and patting him with great affection, there streamed a profuse supply of milk from her breast. And when she opened the mouth of the child with her fingers, she suddenly saw the universal manifestation within his mouth. She saw within the mouth of Krishna the whole sky, including the luminaries, stars in all directions, the sun, moon, fire, air, seas, islands, mountains, rivers, forests, and all other movable and immovable entities. Upon seeing this, Mother Jasoda's heart began to throb, and she murmured within herself, "How wonderful this is!" She could not express anything, but simply closed her eyes. She was absorbed in wonderful thoughts. Krishna's showing the universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even when lying down on the lap of his mother, proves that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whether he is manifested as a child on the lap of his mother or as a charioteer on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. The concoction of the impersonalist that one can become God by meditation or by some artificial material activities is herewith declared false. God is always God in any condition or state or status. And the living entities are always parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. They can never be equal to the inconceivable supernatural power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 7th chapter of Krishna, Salvation of Trinavarta. Does anybody have any question? Yeah.
only qualified brahmanas are in mantras and Vedic mantras. So we have learned a lot of mantras in my Vedic mantras.
So
I'm a sick.
So we have to understand that you have become qualified. By following Srila Prabhupada's instructions, yes, you have become qualified.
You're saying you're going to explain the story about why it comes up in the mouth.
Today, some other day. Mm-hmm. It'll come. When you come to Kamsa's part, we will discuss it. Any other question? Do you have a question, Ram Prashad? Story of? Tripurasura. Oh, I see. Yeah. Tripurasura was a big demon who was creating a lot of disturbance. And Lord Shiva was asked, the demigods approached Lord Shiva to kill him. And so they gave. So the Lord Shiva, then they, Lord Shiva consoled them, assured them, and he fought with Tripurasura. Tripurasura actually had a place in the space. He had his own planet in the space. And Lord Shiva shot an arrow and burnt his whole thing, and then Tripurasura was killed and he fell down dead. Therefore, another name of Lord Shiva is Tripurari. What is the meaning of Tripurari? Tripura Ori, Tripurasya Ori. Ori means an enemy. The enemy of Tripura demon. So therefore, Lord Shiva is Tripurari. No, it's not the same. That's another pastime. That pastime is, you know the pastime? Yeah. Balaram came and complained that Krishna was acting strange. Krishna was like an ordinary child. Balaram came and complained to Mother Yashoda, just like a mother. The other children complain to the mother about other brothers. The mother, you know, especially younger brothers. Mother, you know, Krishna did this mischief today. So Yashoda asked, what happened? He said, Krishna was eating mud. And he complained other things also. So Mother Yashoda asked Krishna, Krishna, did you eat mud? Krishna said, no. Then Mother Yashoda said, then is Balaram lying? Then Krishna says, yes. So then Mother Yashoda said, okay, you open your mouth, let me see. And when Krishna